This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Law Talk on Joy Drive.
Now, it's May, which means we're observing Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It's a time to honour survivors, raise awareness, and advocate for change. And today we're talking about family violence and the social implications and challenges faced by those exposed to family violence. And joining me to discuss this topic is a familiar voice here on Joy Drive. It's managing partner Sally Nichols from Nichols Family Lawyers. Sal, it's so good to chat with you again.
Look, it's always good to be back, Warren, honestly. I know this is a pretty difficult topic, but I know that we can actually traverse it with the appropriate sensitivity. And I guess for anybody who's listening at the moment, if you need to get any assistance or help afterwards, or you think it might be triggering, just please take care of yourself.
Sal, let's start with the basics. I know it's a simple question, but what exactly is classified as domestic violence?
Well, it's an ever-emerging topic, really, and it's moving with society. At the moment, I guess, in Victoria, it's legally defined as any behaviour that is physically, emotionally, psychologically, financially, socially, or spiritually abusive. And that this actually includes forced marriage and dowry-related abuse. It occurs when someone uses power and control to instill fear in a family or a family-like relationship. And this could be between partners, parents, children, carers, or even housemates. However, if it is about more than just individual harm, it does carry deep and lasting social consequences, which is our focus today.
So what are some of the immediate and long-term social impacts of family violence on victims, survivors and their families? And how do these impacts show up, not only at the individual level, but also across the broader community?
Well, I'm happy to answer that, Warren. And I know the listeners won't realise we wanted one of the top CEOs from one of the who looks after women and non-binary people to come and talk, Jay Blakely. I'm so sorry she's got COVID today, but let me do the best I can as a, you know, not being a social scientist. But in the immediate aftermath of family violence, victim survivors often face intense emotional distress, and they may actually withdraw socially, struggle to trust others, and experience instability in their daily lives. Children are particularly vulnerable. They might express trauma through aggression, anxiety, or withdrawal, and in some cases show developmental delays or behavioural challenges at school. And the long term, the effects can manifest as chronic mental health conditions like post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, and depression. And the victim survivor's ability to form and maintain healthy relationships may be significantly affected. Employment and education may be disrupted. So these impacts aren't just personal. They echo through communities affecting schools, workplaces and healthcare systems.
That's really profound, Sal. And what role does the community play in reducing the isolation that many victim survivors do experience?
Well, I think as a community, hopefully victim survivors can reach out to a trusted person, and that can be one of the most powerful and courageous steps that a victim survivor can take. Unfortunately, abusers often work methodically to isolate their victims, so they cut them off from that trusted person, from family, from friends, from community networks, and even financial independence. So this isolation not only increases the victim survivor's dependence on the abuser, but also reinforces that feeling of shame, fear and helplessness. So some survivors might be reluctant to seek help due to the stigma surrounding family violence or a fear of not being believed, or worse, facing further harm. So in these situations, professional support such as counselling or therapy can provide a confidential and non-judgmental space for survivors to begin processing their experiences and regaining a sense of agency. But community support plays an equally vital role. So when communities are informed, doing what we're doing today, so there can be more empathy and responsiveness, that can significantly reduce the isolation that victim survivors feel. This includes ensuring that survivors have access to safe spaces, whether that's a shelter, a supportive workplace, a school, or a community hub. It also involves validating a survivor's experience when they choose to speak out, listening without judgment, and recognising the strength it takes to break the silence, particularly if they've been gaslighted, Warren, at home. So offering compassion and support can be transformative in helping individuals escape their situation and really rebuild their lives.
That gaslighting is just hideous, isn't it? We've spoken about that before. What support systems are currently in place for people that are facing, say, domestic violence and also economic hardship? What's in place for them?
Look, Warren, there are a range of formal and informal support systems designed to assist victim survivors who are facing both violence and economic hardship. However, access to these services can vary significantly depending on location, awareness, and individual circumstances. I mean, if we think about it, people where language is, English is a second language, where they are experiencing, as we said, isolation, regional locations, and also we now know, and it's quite startling, that the degree of people applying for single parent welfare is due to domestic violence. I think it was 62% was the figure I was given the other day. So although there are government initiatives that offer crisis payments, rental assistance and temporary accommodation, these are often lifelines for people escaping violence. It's that awareness and access which is really the first step. There are community legal centres such as WIRE providing free legal advice and specialist family violence services that offer case management, safety planning. I know Safe Steps, I've sent clients to Safe Steps who are awesome at helping have safety plans if you are exiting a relationship. And also there's access to financial counselling through their support services, but the demand is almost overwhelming.
So that's really sad when you think about it, that family violence can also lead to financial instability and poverty for the victims. Can you elaborate a bit on that and how that happens?
Well, abusers frequently exercise control by sabotaging or completely restricting access to finances. And this might involve blocking access to joint bank accounts, withholding money for essentials like food or transport, racking up debt. That's a dreadful one in the victim survivor's name. And there are avenues where, and the financial institutions, particularly after the Royal Commission, are really trying to get on top of these and to make excuses. But one of them that I heard recently was fines, accumulating fines. So just to make people lose their license, but also just get really awful credit ratings, and deliberately preventing them from working or pursuing education. And I think actually, I know it sounds, some people might think it sounds twee, but providing a really unrealistic budget. And we've had, some people have had to ask permission to go and buy a coffee and have that extra $5 or $6 put into their bank account because that wasn't budgeted on for the week. I know that sounds
just a coffee,
but I've actually encountered that, a coffee. I've encountered that actually in my own social group.
Wow.
And it's disturbing. So, and also with clients. So this form of control leaves many victim survivors financially dependent on their abuser, making it incredibly difficult to leave or have the confidence to leave. But when someone does build up the courage and means to escape, they often are doing so from a position of extreme disadvantage. So it's not uncommon for them to be starting over with no income or limited or no savings. And this is often compounded by the pressure of caring for children and finding safe accommodation at very short notice.
It's Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and today we're talking about the social implications of family violence with Nichols Family Lawyer Managing Partner Sally Nichols. Sal, what are the biggest barriers faced by survivors when they actually do try and seek some help?
Well, I think from my feedback from the various NGOs and from our clients is that the social stigma remains a significant barrier for many victim survivors. And unfortunately, there's still a tendency to blame the victim survivor. Common questions like, why did she just leave? oversimplify and completely miss the danger, complexity, and emotional turmoil that a victim survivor faces when attempting to leave an abusive situation. And again, I've been guilty of it, honestly, Warren, when I had one person come to see me who was aware that their partner had guns in the house. And I was absolutely frantic on the phone, trying to set up refuges. Absolutely, you need to get out of there right now. But I was, when I spoke to one of the ladies at the refuge, they said, look, don't discount the protective procedures or processes that this victim survivor has built up. They really engage with them. Don't turn into a big lawyer protective mode, working with them, because they know this person and they know what triggers them. So really listen to them in terms of, working with them and getting them away. So we need to shift the focus away from asking, why didn't that person leave, to asking, why does the abuser choose to abuse? And that's where the conversation should start, with a focus on holding abusers accountable. And trust. Trust is a critical barrier. Survivors often don't trust systems like the police, courts, or child protection services due to previous negative or harmful experiences. And I've heard two really bad experiences, systemic experiences this week. So building trust with survivors takes time, training, and a sustained commitment to providing compassionate and consistent care. Look, the barriers to adults are very different to the barriers for children. Children multiply it, which is just heartbreaking. And as I've mentioned before, accessibility is another significant barrier for many victim survivors, especially for non-English speakers or people with disabilities and those in rural communities.
So we're just about to run out of time, but this is a really important topic.
I'm sorry, it's something I can talk about.
Don't be sorry. Yeah. It's actually important that we do talk about it. And it's something that I think we need to consider, continue the conversation. I just want to ask you before we go, we need what policy changes are needed, I suppose, to better support the victim survivors of family violence and prevent that financial hardship that you were talking about, not even being able to buy a coffee?
Oh, absolutely. Look, we need consistent funding for long-term recovery services. So not just crisis response, there are excellent crisis responses. Mm. So mental health support, trauma-informed care, family reunification programs should be more accessible, and the legal system must become safer and less re-traumatising for survivors, but particularly children. So financial empowerment policies are also vital, like priority access to housing and fast-tracked benefits, and economic safety nets must be stronger and survivor-centred. We should treat domestic violence as a public health and economic issue, not just a criminal one.
Sal, important conversation. One last question. It's Radiothon here at Joy this week.
Yes.
How important
are
organisations like Joy? The theme, stronger together, we're better together. We all should stick together,
absolutely,
shouldn't we, during these times? How important is Joy?
Well, what the opportunity that Joy is providing for you and me to have this conversation. So out there, we might have changed somebody today. We might have made them an active bystander. Just keep reaching out to someone who you feel is vulnerable. Offer your help. Call it out and say, this isn't right. And I think that Joy can do that by us having this opportunity to talk about community issues in this really transparent and strategic, collaborative way to offer strategies. It's just so impactful. So well done, Joy. Please give to Joy. You and I are going to work on some bespoke drive gifts. We're going to have a little conversation afterwards. But thank you, Joy, for really allowing us to have these types of conversations. There'll be many more.
And you're right. They're important conversations. Sometimes they're not pleasant to listen to, Sel, but as you said, if one person is listening and can benefit from it, it's worth it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And reach out to those who in your workplace and call it out. Say, no, you should not be spoken to like that. You shouldn't be belittled. It's not right. And that can sometimes give somebody just a little bit of a sounding board that they don't have if they're very isolated. But there's a host of resources that we have on Joy, as I understand it, to access, including Safe Cess, safe steps, sorry, and respect, and many other bespoke switchboard, bespoke LGBTIQ+ opportunities as well through Safe Steps too.
Sal, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks for joining us today on Drive.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Sally Nichols, Managing Partner and Founder of Nichols Family Lawyers.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.